So what happens? Let's look briefly at the way in which we come into contact with the three jewels, especially to begin with, say, the Buddha. First of all, we may say, we come to know about the Buddha. This is what usually happens. We hear about the Buddha, we read about the Buddha, we come to know the historical facts about the Buddha. We know that he was born in the borderlands between the present-day Nepal and the present-day India. We know that he was born into a patrician, even a princely family. And we know how he went forth from the household life when he was, according to most traditions, 29 years of age. We know how he sat beneath the Bodhi tree and how he gained enlightenment, and how he taught his Dharma subsequently and gathered disciples. So we know these historical facts. Here it's our intellect, for want of a better term, that comes into play. Incidentally, I wish that we didn't have to use this term intellect. It's one of these terms which has been, in recent centuries perhaps, very grossly devalued, but we don't seem to have any other term to replace it. But I use it, so to speak, within inverted commas. We have this, as it were, intellectual knowledge about the Buddha. We know the historical facts. But of course, you can know the historical facts about the Buddha, about the Buddha's life, without being a Buddhist. There may be non-Buddhists, scholars, academics, who know the historical facts about the Buddha's life much better than you do. But there's no feeling. That's the difference. When you know simply about the Buddha as a historical personage, and you know simply the historical facts, or what we believe are the historical facts about his career, is simply your intellect which is coming into play. But if you become sufficiently acquainted with those historical facts, especially if you dwell upon certain incidents, certain episodes in the life of the Buddha, then perhaps you start developing a feeling for the Buddha. Perhaps you come across that incident where the Buddha is making his rounds of the monk's dwelling, and he sees an old monk just lying there, sick and neglected by the other monks. And the Buddha calls upon Ananda, his faithful attendant and disciple, to help him lift that sick monk onto a bed, to wash him, to care for him. And then the Buddha, of course, calls together the other monks and asks them why they are not caring for that sick monk. And he says, "Monks, you've no father and no mother. You should care for one another." So when one reads incidents like that, or when one reads, for instance, the story about the Buddha and Kisagotami, the woman who had lost her only child, and when one comes to know how tactfully and compassionately, but at the same time how profoundly and radically, the Buddha dealt with her case, how he consoled her in the highest possible way, then you're not just learning facts about the Buddha's life story, you begin to have some feeling for the Buddha, some feeling for the Buddha's compassion, some feeling for the Buddha's wisdom, some feelings for the Buddha's energy, his unremitting energy, as he preached the Dharma for so many years. So then, as you start feeling in this way, your emotions come into play. The Buddha is no longer just an object of your knowledge. He's also an object of your emotion. It's not just your intellect that is brought into play, but your feelings and your emotions. And you can go on to contemplate the attributes of the Buddha quite systematically to build up your feeling for him. You can also do the Sevenfold Puja. That has much the same effect. your devotional feelings are increased and enhanced. And perhaps you can do, if you're, especially if you're an order member, a visualization exercise. Visualization, say, of Shakyamuni. I say exercise, but again, single inverted commas. Because when you visualize, say, Shakyamuni, or any other Buddha or Bodhisattva, it isn't just an exercise in a neutral sense, in an emotionally neutral sense. There must be some feeling for the person, the spiritual person, the transcendental person whom you're endeavoring to visualize. So in this way, as you develop more and more feeling for the Buddha, you become, as it were, drawn towards the Buddha. You want to become more like the Buddha. And in this way, will comes into play. So how is it that will comes into play? Well, will comes into play because it isn't an easy thing to become like the Buddha, as you wish. You have to make an effort. So in this way, intellect, emotion, and will, each in turn, one by one, come into play. And it's only when all come into play, when we know about the Buddha, when we feel for the Buddha, and we have the will to become like the Buddha, that we are able, effectively, to go for refuge.